Okay, so who are you people? Let's start with.
Okay, I'm Suzanne Hansen. I'm a program manager on the non-professional tools team.
Okay.
Adam Nathan, a developer on the non-professional tools team.
Now, you guys have been building some cool stuff since when I was actually on the Buffalo team. What are you announcing in your own words?
Well, as you know, of course, Popfly has been about primarily creating mashups, but our goal is to create, to enable people to create all kinds of interesting content, share it with their friends, and being able to do so with no programming experience required. So now what we're announcing is that you'll be able to easily create casual games. Casual games that are Silverlight-based. Gives you a lot of power without writing code, but if you want to write code and do things more advanced, there's a nice way to transition into that as well.
Cool.
So we think people will have a lot of fun with it.
Cool. So how'd the idea for doing casual games start out?
I think it was something kind of on our sights for a while, that first we'd look at the area of mashups and then we'd look at games after that. Certainly if you look at hobbyist developers, games is a big topic, something that a lot of people enjoy creating. So it was actually, I guess I got to start looking at it almost 6 months ago, and you know, kind of like the way Popfly started with mashups, I was prototyping things for a while, and then we started building up the team a few months ago. And now there are three developers. Suzanne is our PM, and we've got one full-time test person,
and that's making
it a reality.
So one of the hardest parts is, how do you make something that is easy for non-programmers? So how do you actually go about testing it that, like, you know, ordinary Joe or Jane can build a game? Like, how do you, did you guys use some of the old Popfly mashup folks, or get customers,
We used a variety of people, actually. Jason Zander, our boss's boss, his kids came in, and, you know, they used the game creator. I don't know, we've informally done little studies, but, you know, this thing we're releasing, it is an alpha, and it is still kind of an experiment in a way, and so we'll definitely be open to continued feedback, I'm sure. People are going to have a long list of feature requests and ways that we can continue to improve on it.
Cool. All right, so we got to get into some demos, but anything else you guys want to say before we get into demos?
Can't think of anything else. No,
the
demos.
The demos kind of speak for themselves. So. Dun, 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 dun.
All right. So, we are actually filming a little bit before we are launching this thing, so this is an internal site that I'm going to show you. But here's Popfly. And so you can see you can create a few different kinds of things on Popfly. What I'm going to do is try this new thing, create a game. And I guess to, if we've got the time, I'd maybe like to create three different types of games from scratch. The first one I'll create is a little space shooter game, just to kind of go over the basic features of the game creator. And if you have questions, feel free to bring them up.
Of course.
So first I can start by, you know, ripping an existing game if I don't want to start from scratch. But for this demo, I'll start from scratch. And the way I create my game is I assemble actors on various scenes. Actors have behaviors that are triggered by events. And so you can arrange your scenes, give your actors and scenes lots of behaviors, set properties, things like
so
that.
So what's an example of an actor, just for...
Well, probably the easiest thing is, let me expand one of these categories here. You can browse and search for a bunch. You think of actors like clip art, but they're actually more like controls, because actors may have built-in behaviors and properties and act a certain way by default. In the near future, people will be able to share you know, actors with anyone else. So this will be an ever-growing list that the community contributes to. But for now, we've got a fairly decent list of actors that we've provided for people. So to demonstrate, let's... I said I was going to do a space shooter game. I'll search for space-related actors, and I see there's a variety of things here. Let me get two spaceships. I'll choose that green one and the orange one. And I'll just use those two actors in my game. With those actors selected, let me go over to the scenes area.
Just to explain here, so we started off on the left-hand side picking actors. So now we have these two sort of controls, and then the scenes is we're going to, I guess, manipulate those?
Yes, so we've got, you can create any number of scenes. By default, we're started off with five scenes here. There's your basic splash screen that you can go on and customize, your main scene, which is a blank slate, a scene for when you won, for when you lost, and for putting instructions. And, you know, you can delete these, you can add them, but just to get people started with some kind of standard template to work from.
Okay.
So this is my main scene. I want it to be a space game. Let me add a background to make this look a bit better. So there was actually a suitable background that appeared in the previous search. I'll just add this as a background now. This is just another actor, but I'm choosing to have it stretch and fill as my background here. So that looks nice. Let me add my actors to the scene so I can select them over here. I'll use these green spaceships as my bad guys, so I'll copy and paste a bunch of them. I'll probably do three rows of four bad guys along the top. And I'll make myself, the user-controlled actor, this orange guy down here. And I'll make that the basic layout of my game. I'll want to shoot at the bad guys. The bad guys should shoot at me, and they should move around a bit. But as far as the layout of my scene, that should do it. So to get these behaviors of shooting and motion, I want to go to these actors and actually add some of these behaviors. So back to my actors list, I'll bring up the green spaceship. I can do a number of things with it. I can change the way it looks. I can add behaviors, which I'll do now. So the way behaviors work is there's, on the left-hand side, a limited palette to choose from that we provide for you, covering the common game scenarios. Or you could write your own custom code behavior. And every behavior has its own various settings to play with, and each one is triggered by a specific event. But to get going, let me add a motion behavior to these green spaceships, and let's see what we can do here. There are a number of options that can get pretty powerful, but if we want to do something simple, let's say, well, let's pick a direction and just try that out. So this is saying, make the green guys move to the right forever, and you can see they're doing that. But you know, that's not too interesting. For this game, I'd like them to go back and forth along the top, trying to dodge my bullets. So let's say only move to the right for a second and a half, and reverse
when... Hold on one second.
Yes.
Okay.
And reverse that motion when done, repeat forever. If you're familiar with Silverlight or WPF, it's kind of analogous to some of the animation options there.
Okay, so the guys will move left, right, then left.
Right. And repeat that pattern indefinitely.
And the nice thing is, as you add these behaviors, you can actually sort of see them in action, so you can sort of test in real time.
That's right. That's right.
Awesome.
So I'm happy with that motion. Let's add some motion to the orange spaceship. So let's go over to the orange guy, bring up his behavior list. And what I want to do with the orange spaceship is move it with the keyboard, and I want it to move left and right. So I'll add two motion behaviors. I'll tell one of them to move to the right, and rather than going forever, I'll have it move only during the event that I choose, and I'll show you a bit more about what that means in a moment. So, move to the right, move to the left. Now my job is to decide what events should trigger this motion. For the green guys, I left it as the default load event, because I wanted the motion to start right from the start of the game and keep going forever. Since I want this to be keyboard control, let's see what events we have to choose from. And on the left-hand side, there's a category of events, whether it's keyboard, mouse, timer, really generic events. Really the only things that are game-specific are the collision things that we'll get into. But I want a keyboard event, so if I choose keyboard, I get a bunch of rich options here for, without having to write any boilerplate code about, oh, what key was pressed, I can do that kind of pre-filtering here. So this is the right motion, I'll say, do that motion when I click the right arrow key. And I could choose as many keys as I want, but I'll just stick to the right arrow key. I've also got the option of saying, do I want this event to happen only when the key is first pressed, as long as it's down, when it's released, and I'm going to leave this as the default, while the right key is down, move to the right. For the left motion, I'll do the same thing, except the left arrow key. So that should do it for the motion of this game. The green guys are moving back and forth. The orange guy should be able to move with the keyboard. The last thing I wanted to do was have them shoot at each other. So there happens to be a shoot behavior here. This is really just a shortcut for spawning a different actor with an extra motion. So what I can do here is I can choose any actor that I want to shoot. There happens to be a category of projectiles that are appropriate for shooting that I could choose from. So I'll just choose this bullet here. Something I can do easily with any behavior is add sound. While I'm at it, I might as well add a sound effect here. There's a nice library to choose from, so if I search for laser-related effects, I get a lot of options here. So I'll choose that classic laser. I like the way that sounded. Let's add some motion. So I'll tell the bullet to shoot upward. If I preview that, I see, well, that's moving a bit slower than I'd like, so let me speed that up here, try again, and I'm happy with that. Now I have to worry about what event triggers this again, so I'll go back to the event list, make it keyboard controlled, and I think the space bar is appropriate for shooting. But in this case, I'll say when you press the keyboard, when you press the space bar, instead of streaming a whole stream of bullets while down.
Sure.
But, you know, there are all these options you can play with to get very different game mechanics. So that'll take care of the orange guy shooting. All that's left now for the main functionality of my game is to have the green spaceships shoot at me. So let's add a shoot behavior. For the event to trigger this, I can choose a timer event. And instead of a regular interval, which would be a little strange, let's say make every green spaceship shoot downward between 1 and 9 seconds. So it looks...
we're actually adding sort of random behavior here.
That's right. It's a random timer event where I choose the upper and lower bound.
Okay.
Now let's choose a different bullet for the green guys here. And finally I'll choose a motion. I'll say move downward, pick a speed. Now if we see what's going on here in the preview, the green spaceships on the top actually are shooting. And killing
yes.
their own kind, in addition to me, which it's successfully doing. So that's obviously not the behavior that I want for this game. So let's see where that's coming from. When I added those projectiles as the things that are being shot by these actors, it did add them as actors to my game. But because they were added as projectiles, we added an extra little behavior here by default that says, when you collide with things, make yourself disappear and make the other guy disappear. And if we look at the details of the collision event that's triggering this, we can see it's whenever the bullet collides with any solid actor, and both of these spaceships happen to be solid actors, when you mark something as solid, it gets a lot of physics by default, which is a very handy thing to have.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, I don't want to trigger this when it collides with anything. I want it to trigger the disappearance when it collides with just the orange spaceship. So I can decide exactly what I want this collision event to be with a lot of the same options that the other events have. And that should do it for my game. So why don't we try playing this? And there's my splash screen. I'll click to play. I can move the orange spaceship around. I can shoot. I can kill the green guys. The green guy killed me, and you can see the green guys are no longer killing each other. So,
cool.
That's basically what I wanted. Now, of course, nothing's triggering losing the game or winning the game, so that would be a nice thing to add at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I mentioned I have those scenes for winning and losing that I could take advantage of. What I need to do now is just decide when should I transition to those scenes. So, losing. I should lose if the orange spaceship goes away. So I can add a behavior to the orange spaceship that's a scene change behavior, and say, go to the lost scene. And when should I do that? When this actor disappears. So that one's pretty straightforward. The other one is a bit more tricky. When should I win? Well, I want to win when there are basically no more green spaceships on the main scene.
Mm-hmm.
So what I can do is add a behavior to the main scene, another scene change behavior. This is going to the winning scene. For the event to trigger this, I can choose a property change event. Now, we haven't really talked about properties up to this point, but actors have properties, scenes have properties, the game has global properties. There are a bunch built in, and you can define your own. If I look at the properties of main, I can see there are a bunch already there, including these dynamic properties that tell me the number of any given actor that are in that scene at any time.
Mm-hmm.
So I could say, well, the green spaceships are called smooth spaceships, so I'll say, raise this event when the number of smooth spaceships in main equals zero. And so I get a simple little query builder style, very specific event here.
Very similar to even Excel.
Yeah, yeah.
In the setting of
right
filters, if you will.
That's right. You can filter a lot of these events, even by your own custom properties. There's also an extra little filter button here for doing all kinds of extra narrowing down without having to write code there.
And what if you wanted to have, say, three orange spaceships, like three lives or something?
All right. Okay. Well, yeah, you can do any number of things. I thought you meant, like, three side-by-side, which you could do, and by default they'd all do the same thing based on your keyboard movements. If you wanted to do lives, yes, you could define a property like lives. You can do a property change behavior to decrement the number of lives when something happens, so that disappears.
When that actor disappears.
Exactly. Okay. Instead of immediately transitioning to the lost scene, I could decrement the variable, absolutely.
Okay, cool.
So that hooks up the basic win-loss conditions. While I'm in here making it a bit more fancy, let's go to the bullets I'm shooting, and they also have that disappear on collision behavior. One thing I want to do for this is add a special effect. This, again, is just a way to tie in yet another kind of actor. We have a category of actor called special effects. And these are all tagged, so when users share their own actors, they'll be able to tag them and get them in these categories in the same kind of fashion. Let's pick an explosion. And no explosion would be complete without a nice sound effect. So if we look here, let's find a massive explosion. I like that one. And let's play this enhanced game. So nice explosions. Oh, I just got hit and I lost. You know, I can
play again.
And
now the lost screen game.
And so I've got a pretty complete experience here. It ties into, if I click how to play, there's that instruction scene, which I didn't fill out yet. So that's pretty neat. Let me save this before I go further. I'll save it as shooter. Now, all PopFlight projects are stored up in the cloud. We use something called Windows Live Storage.
Mm-hmm.
Once you share it, you can access it from anywhere. You can easily share it with your friends and easily take it to places like Facebook, Windows Live Spaces, all kinds of places like that. Your own blog, we give you the code for embedding an iframe. And actually, one thing I could show you right now is if I click the share button, I'll say, well, let's. You can see some of the options here for Facebook Dig, etc. Let me download it as a Windows Vista sidebar gadget. And this is our internal environment, I'll remind you, so some things may be a little slow here, but this will download the gadget for me. I install it, and I'll wait for that to come up in the sidebar. While we're waiting for that, I can start to show you... Oh, actually, there it is, right over there. so here, can you see that it's right now small and docked on the sidebar, but it's fully playable if I want to play it at that size, or let me drag it off the sidebar and...
That's a cute little effect. It pauses.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so it automatically pauses when you lose focus, and you know everything you do automatically pauses. You don't have to write any code to participate in these basic behaviors that you'd come to expect. Similarly, you know, I didn't add background music to this, but if you didn't like the music, if you didn't like the sound effects, you know, you've got the mute button, you've got all these things that everything you do in the game creator automatically plays nicely.
Excellent. So, sorry, let's see this one second here, if I can... Focus. So you have a mute button, and what are the other options?
How to play, that takes you to the instruction scene. Tweak, so if you've shared this, anyone can click this button. If they have a PopFly account, open it up in the game creator and just tweak it from there. If they want to change the actors, change the behaviors, change sound effects, music, whatever it is, you can make the game your own. And then share, that brings up the same kind of sharing options. So Whether this is already, if you come across someone else's game that's embedded in their blog, you can say, hey, I want to share this with my Facebook friends, and just click them and go.
Yeah, so this is, like, classic part of Poplite is all about sharing. So you find somebody that built a game, so you just built this game. Rather than me having to create it from scratch, I can just download your game and then see exactly how you did those events. So if I don't know how you did, you know, whatever specific feature, your bullet explosion sounds, I can just look at your events and then change and modify them.
Exactly.
Share them back.
Exactly. And there's so many little customizations you can do to really change the characteristic of the game, whether it's artwork related or the behaviors and what events trigger what. It's really a fun way that hopefully people will enjoy creating, sharing, tweaking, and all that stuff.
Sweet.
So I wanted to do one more thing with this game before trying a different kind of game, and that is to start to get into code a little bit. So one thing that I think is pretty neat is you can go to any behavior. For example, let's go to that motion of the green spaceships that moves them back and forth indefinitely.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you noticed, there are code buttons at the end of each behavior. You can see the code for any behavior, and you can change it and keep it as custom code. So this back and forth motion, there's...
And what kind of code are we looking at here?
For now, this is JavaScript.
Okay.
So the basically, the games you create, I should mention, they are Silverlight 1.0 compatible. So these will work great whether you have Silverlight 1.0 or Silverlight 2 installed. And basically, your game runs with JavaScript and XAML. All the actors are Silverlight-based XAML.
Mm-hmm.
This is JavaScript code here. And there's a fair bit of code here because the back-and-forth motion is a little bit complex. But let me simplify it a bit and just do something custom. So let's say we want to give every green spaceship a random kind of jittering. What I'll do is I'll set the value of the x acceleration property to math.random every time this is called, let's say times 100, so a number between 0 and 100. And I'll do the same in the y direction. Now I can preview down here and see visually what my code just did. And I can see they are randomly jittering, but they're also drifting down into the right because this is always a positive number that I'm adding to the acceleration. So let me actually tweak the code a bit and say subtract 0.5 from math.random, so it could be positive or negative. Preview that again, and there I get random jittering, which, you know, is kind of a neat effect there. Now, even though I did this custom code behavior...
I love the fact that you can just have that very quick, almost like immediate window visual preview. That's awesome.
Right, and still kind of see it in context with all the other behaviors going on.
Right.
And even though I did this completely custom code, and, you know, that's pretty simple, but you could do something very complex if you wanted, let me keep this as now a custom behavior. I can still add as many non-custom behaviors as I want, and everything composes beautifully. So, for example, let me add another motion behavior here, one that I'll just configure through the UI, and I'll say, let's do oscillate up and down for a second. And if I preview that, I can see there's the up and down oscillation with the random jittering also happening.
Right.
I could do one of the more advanced motions here. Let's say move toward the mouse indefinitely. Preview that. And here you can see they're following my mouse, yet they have the random jittering that I wrote custom code for.
Oh, that's awesome.
So yeah, there's some really powerful built-in motion options for following the mouse, following other actors, where you can really get some decent-looking AI without actually writing code. So that's pretty much everything I wanted to show you for this game. Are you
okay
for me to
try
a different kind of game?
Cool. All right. Stuff.
All right, let's close this guy. Let's do kind of a car racing-ish kind of game. I guess not a standard racing game, but actually, do you know that game where... there's basically, like, you drive a car, there's an enemy car, and you have, like, a tail that you try to avoid or, like, box someone in.
Tail that you try to avoid? Spy Hunter?
I don't know. Actually, Tron had that game in it, you know, where you...
Perfect. Where
light cycles.
Okay.
Light cycles.
There you go.
Let's create kind of a simple version of light cycles. Sorry, we just have to wait for this internal site to respond here. What you can do, though, to create these kinds of games, you know, I mentioned there are a lot of built-in actors. We've got some nice car-related actors. Here we go. Let me just bring them up here.
And people can load custom images, JPEGs, etc.
Yes.
And set them as sort of like a default actor, like a skin on top of an actor, if you will.
That's right. Actually, let me just show you a bit of that. So if we expand some of these people here, I mentioned these are all Silverlight XAML based. If we pick something here, like say this ninja, if I look at the details of the actor, one thing that we really haven't talked about yet is some of these actors have multiple states. So along the side here we see there's default right and left, and if I select them I can see, okay, there he is facing right, there he is facing left. And some of these actors have a rich list of states already in there to take advantage of. But talking about customizing the appearance here, if I click the appearance button, I get a lightweight UI design experience similar to what the scenes had. So if I want to, say, move, resize things around, I can even unmask this ninja. And now I've got this guy here, you know, maybe I want to stretch out his head a bit. So he's no longer a ninja, he's a egg man with a top hat. you know, you can do that, or you can, you know, switch to the raw XAML, do what you want. You could create something in Blend, create something in your tool of choice, paste it in there, it'll work great.
So it's a copy-paste thing from Blend.
Yes.
Okay.
Or Visual Studio or any okay. tool that where you like creating your XAML.
So is there a Poplar Explorer tie-in to this?
There will be. Certainly there's our plugin can naturally support these types of projects. You can upload files to your game. Something I didn't show you yet is this game tab here. Here's a place where you can add global properties, like the score property that's there by default, or you can just upload files from your computer, give it a URL, and boom, you can get images, videos,
sound effects, everything.
Sound effects, right.
Sure.
And then you can reference them from your XAML and go from there.
Awesome.
So let me delete that Eggman. I wanted to create a car game, so let's see what we've got. Related to cars. a lot of different things showing up here. I'll make myself be a red car. I'll make an enemy be the green car, just because it has the kind of skull on it. I'll keep it at that. I'll make it a simple two-actor game for the most part, like the last one. Let's choose a decent background here. I like that plain one. I'll add the red car, add the green car, and let's do one more thing. Let's add some walls to box us in. So let's search for some walls. That fire's kind of neat, but I don't want that for this game. Let's get some blue walls in here. So what I'll do is I'll just add four walls, and I'll drag and size them so basically to box in these cars. These walls are an example of a solid actor, and the cars are solid actors. So what happens by default, without having to write any code or do any special behaviors, is that they'll bump into each other. They won't overlap. So this way the walls serve their purpose as kind of keeping the cars in this arena.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll do it for the basic layout of this game. For the motion of these things, I want them to kind of move like a car. Like I should be able to steer it to the left, steer it to the right with the arrow keys. And I could go ahead and add some behaviors here. One thing I'll do to make this a bit quicker for the video is leverage some of the shortcuts up here. So there's a drop down here for actors and for scenes that plop in some pre-configured appropriate behaviors for you for some of the common scenarios, so you don't have to go through all the tedious work of setting these up yourself. So there happens to be something we have in here by default. I want to drive like a car by pressing keys. So if I choose that shortcut, I actually get three behaviors added to my list. So one for moving forward, one for steering right, and one for steering left.
That's awesome. So one quick question.
Yes.
You all are defining what goes into that drop-down, or can a user define that? Or
for now, we control it. So the first things that you'll see users kind of getting their hands on is adding to the actors list.
Sure.
At some point, maybe the list of built-in behaviors to choose from, you'll also see user-contributed behaviors there. Maybe we could have nice ways for users to package up pre-configured behaviors. But for now, we can control that list. Okay. So, and we can see that, okay, this moving forward motion and what event is triggering it. Okay, it's set up to be triggered on the up arrow key, and, you know, that makes sense. For this game, what I want to happen is I want the cars to just always be driving forward automatically, and the only thing I can control is the steering left and right. So what I'll do is I will change this to just be a load event. So this will move forward on load, and something that's kind of subtle here that's different about the way cars are driving versus the way the spaceships are moving, mm-hmm. if I look at this upward motion, it's actually marked as relative to self, as opposed to this scene relative behavior where everything's global, north, south, east, west.
Show me that one more time.
Right, so relative to self means I should always move forward. So even
No matter what direction.
And actually, so in this preview here, I should be able to try out these pre-configured behaviors. If I use the arrow keys, you can see me steering left, steering right. If I, I didn't apply my change to make this move forever. Okay, now it's moving upward forever. If I press the keyboard to steer it, I can see, okay, now it's able to keep
That's
moving that
amazing.
Way.
That's amazing.
So this self-relative motion can be useful for things like this, if you want things to kind of drive, or bullets that should shoot, whichever way the shooter is facing. Okay, so what I want to do here is, let's make this guy go faster. For the rotations, let me speed that up as well. I'll give it the same speed of 500 units per second instead of 100. I think that'll do it for the kind of driving motion. What I can do now for the green car is I can do a similar thing. Actually, what I'll do is, since I made some changes to the red car's behaviors, such as making those motions faster, rather than doing the same, I want to drive like a car, I'll say, I want this green car to act like the red car. And what that'll do is kind of copy and paste those behaviors onto the green car list.
And you can do that with any actor in a scene?
Any actor in your game. You can copy and paste those. So I don't need this duplicate disappear behavior. Move forward, yes, I want it to move always from the start. Now the steering, since this is supposed to be the computer player, I don't want to control this with the keyboard. Let's change the events that trigger this. And again, I'll just go for a simple random timer. So turn clockwise every 1 to 3 seconds, and counterclockwise also randomly every 1 to 3 seconds. Actually, why don't we change one other thing about the motion is, since this is a kind of rarely occurring event, I don't want it to be just a quick burst of rotation. I want to say, when that event happens, let's rotate 90 degrees. So here we can choose the exact length of that rotation animation. So 90 degrees clockwise, 90 degrees counterclockwise. And actually, let's refresh this preview here. If we watch the green car, we can see, you know, it's kind of
driving
around randomly. And, you know, then I can drive around myself, and we've got, right now, I guess, a little bit of a bumper car game.
This is amazing.
Oh, wow, and it just killed me. So let's do what I intended with the game, though. So I wanted there to be kind of a trail of fire or something that we want to avoid. So one way I can do this is with this same old shoot behavior. Let's add some shoot behaviors here. If I choose a projectile, I'll just choose that simple pulsing circle. But I won't give it any motion. And I'll say, fire this guy every single frame. So this is the ultimate timer. Every single frame, shoot a projectile that moves nowhere. Now, because the car is moving, it'll leave a trail. I'll do the same thing for the red car. Shoot the similar bullet, no motion, but do this every frame. Now, I don't want the trail to keep growing and growing and growing and pollute the scene. So what we can do is we can add a behavior to the bullet that says, we don't care about these other behaviors that are there by default. Instead, let's say disappear after 1 second.
Sure.
So that way, it should be a fixed length tail. So, and actually, the green car is leaving these behind, so why don't we take this opportunity to change the appearance? I'll just switch to the XAML. This has a simple gradient. I'll say go from green to black instead of the shades of red it was doing. And so there we've got a slightly different pulsing fire
bullet. So you built in XAML pad within here as well.
Yeah. I mean, right. XAML pad with some very lightweight UI things of dragging, resizing, deleting elements. So let's give that same single behavior to the red trail where we want to say, make yourself disappear after 1 second. Okay, before playing this game, let's hook up the win-lose thing. So I should lose if I collide with a green bullet that the green car is leaving behind. So let's do that same transition to the lost scene, this time on a collision event. Here's, you know, I can choose exactly what I won't care about colliding, myself and any green bullet.
Okay.
If that happens, I lose. I should win if the green car... So, scene change 1, triggered by collision of the green car with the red bullet. I think I got that right. So
now, how come we didn't just do when the green car disappears?
That is another way to do it. So, I actually, just a moment ago, I deleted that behavior on the bullet that said... If something collides with me,
okay.
Make it disappear. But I could have done that as well,
okay.
Right? There are a number of ways to express...
Just because that was the one from the voice.
Yep. So, all right, let's try this guy out. All right, there's the trail of fire, and... Ooh, okay, and he ran into my thing. So, you know, there's the basic, you know, whatever you want to call it, game that I guess I'm pretty good at because I won twice in a row.
Now, how about multiplayer? Is that crazy
multiplayer
to think about?
Right, so we don't provide any features, per se, that make that natural. I mean, it depends, I guess, what you mean. Some people on our team have created a form of multiplayer game where, okay, one player uses these keys and the other player uses these keys, and you can kind of control. And that,
sure.
That's fun if you're in the same room. One thing that we hopefully will provide some features for is... the challenge-style multiplayer, where we provide the infrastructure along the sharing, where it's like, okay, I played this game, we'll remember your high score, let me challenge my friend. Okay, Dan,
okay.
I just scored 500 in race cars, can you beat that? And, you know, so that's kind of a another form. As far as actually, like, you know, true multiplayer over the internet, maybe in the future, but
okay.
Not for
All right.
Now.
You guys are doing plenty.
All right, so if we have time for one more game.
Yeah.
All right, let me close this and just open up a new instance here. Let's do a side-scroller. Side-scrollers are pretty popular.
And to be clear, like, the game creator games, like, we talked about some of them, but I guess some of the only limitations are, you know, you're not going to build, like, a 3D...
Right.
You know, you're not going to build... Doom or something.
Right. You could certainly try, especially as a developer, if you want to, you know, write a lot of custom code and your own kind of 3D engine.
Or I guess the key scenarios you guys are really doing are 2D style arcade games.
Yes.
We've seen some, like, top-down, we're going to see some side-scrollers as well.
Mm-hmm.
Any other scenarios on games that you guys have really sort of thought about enabled?
It's basically the whole realm of casual games, whether it's kind of puzzle-related things. Actually, I didn't show drag-drop is trivial to do. It's a single-motion behavior. We have a shortcut for it as well.
So you can imagine card games and things like
card
that.
Card games, yeah. You know, we don't have some of the built-in things for shuffling cards or some of the logic there. So card games will require some custom code for now. Won't be the easiest thing to create. But other than that, other kinds, any kind of puzzle games, shooting games.
Tetris.
Tetris, yeah. That's, you know... Parts of that are probably a bit challenging without code, but yeah, there's a wide range of things that you should be able to create with these basic concepts of the basic behaviors of moving, appearing, disappearing, and all the basic plumbing, all the basic events are there. And then for that area where, you know, the built-in things just don't quite cut it, switching to code, you can accomplish, you know, pretty much anything that you can accomplish inside a browser.
Awesome, and it gives you sort of like the core anchor and you can define those extensibility points.
Yeah, and you know, the fact that even if you did a bunch of custom code, the fact that you've defined your actors here, you know, you can create your own actors, your brand new actors to your game and give them whatever appearance you want. It makes it still just as easy for someone to come along and tweak your actors, tweak behaviors, even if you have a ton of custom code behind the scenes.
Cool.
Okay, side-scroller. Let's... I actually kind of like that ninja that I brought up earlier, so let's add him to the game. What else do we need here? We need some kind of bad guy. Let's maybe look at some of these animals. There's a rocket chicken that I kind of like. We need some kind of ground to walk on. We've got some actors here that are things you can tile. Let's pick just this wood block as the ground. Maybe some other block just to be there to push around. There's actually, I think there's some nice actors here we can add for a little variety. A flagpole and a flag. They're independent actors, so we can give the flag some interesting motion. Let's maybe just keep it at that. Okay, for my main scene, I'll choose a background here. Some of these backgrounds tile nicely, and so far I've let the background scale, but I'll say, I want to tile this thing, and that's just a built-in option. So, what I can do is, let's zoom this guy out and make my world really, really long. Because that's the way a typical side-scroller will work. Now, of course, I don't just want to see this whole long world all at once. I need some kind of viewport that that will scroll, hence side-scroller. And it just so
and
happens...
I see you talking using XAML terms here. So,
oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, so the viewport is... You're actually using those controls and the viewport to size?
Well,
or?
Today we are not because this whole thing runs on Silverlight 1.0 and a lot of those controls don't exist. So the viewport has to be, you know, an implementation... As an implementation detail, we do it ourselves. The tiling, we have to do ourselves. But in the future, you know, when this leverages more features that are specific to Silverlight 2, then it can naturally use those same controls. And it'll be totally invisible to users because it's the same concept. But let's enable the viewport. And now I've got this other thing that I can move around, resize. And so if I have something like this where, okay, you see a little bit of the screen and yet the level is that long, that's a reasonable layout there. Let's let's set the stage here. So I'll just add this ninja boy just here. Let's take the wood block. I'll put it along the bottom here. Let's maybe stretch it out. But then also copy, paste, and tile these. Let's zoom out again so we can see the ground tiling along. So we've got our world, we've got the ground. Let's add some bad guys here. Let me just shrink the chickens to be a bit more
those are bad-looking guys.
Actually, maybe later down the road we'll have some really surprise huge chicken that can... do some mischief there. What else do we have here? Let's add the some bricks. I'll just put a few there. You know, you kind of get the idea of
yeah, you're building Mario.
No, this is Ninja Boy. I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
let's actually just... let's add a... let's make that about that big. Let's add a flagpole here with a flag. How about... the idea here is the flag can kind of start on the ground, and it could be some sort of checkpoint, and when you reach it, the flag goes up, you know, nice little thing there. I think that's all I wanted to do for this world. Let's get to the behaviors. So, for one thing, there's this issue of this viewport that needs to scroll. So, if we look at the behaviors here, I can add a motion behavior to the scene, and that'll actually apply to the viewport. So all those options about move left, move right, you know, indefinitely for a fixed period of time, oscillate back and forth, I can do all that with the viewport.
Okay.
What I'll do is I'll use a shortcut here that says I want a viewport following Ninja Boy 1. That's the specific instance in the scene that I want the viewport to follow. And something that's kind of neat about this is actually a custom code behavior that does something a bit more advanced than the built-in motion options. So if we look at what got added here, this behavior that's called Follow Ninja Boy 1, it's triggered by a property change event that says raise this event when the Ninja Boy 1's X property changes to any value. And if we look at the code that moves this viewport, basically what it's doing here is leaving it still, but if the actor gets within a certain margin on the left, start moving to the left. If it's a certain margin to the right, start moving to the right. And you can see all the variables clearly here where, okay, the margin is set to be 1/4 of the viewport. And you can customize and tweak that. But, you know, that's a bit of an advanced behavior that is dynamic based on the actor's motion. So I'll keep that. That should do the trick for me. Let's now worry about all these actors and their motion. So let's start with Ninja Boy. I could add some behaviors here to make him move left and right. I want to make him jump. It's a fair number of behaviors here. So fortunately, this is a pretty common scenario. We have a shortcut for this that says I want to run and jump by pressing keys from a side view. If I add that, I get a nice long list of behaviors. You know, they're normal behaviors. I can still go. I can tweak them as if I just manually added them myself. And so this one is called gravity. It's a constant downward motion, I can see. This has actually added a custom property to this actor called can jump to specifically allow jumping only when it's colliding with ground, any solid actor, basically.
Okay.
Otherwise, if I were to do kind of the naive...
You'd be floating through air.
Right, I could just jump in midair if I didn't do...
That's a power-up.
Yes. if that's what you wanted, you could absolutely create a game that does that.
Right.
Run right, run left... Jump is an upward motion. Actually, since this ninja has these additional states of facing to the right and facing to the left, why don't we add that in as well to make this a bit more realistic? So I can add some state change behaviors here. I actually want to add 3. And here's what I'll do. I can say change to one of your states. And, you know, I can add my own states with my own XAML at any time, but these built-in ones are nice. So I'll say let's change to the right state when I'm moving right, and one of the events, the event that triggers that is when the keyboard, when the right mouse button is pressed.
Mm-hmm.
That's
very nice that you have the even inline.
Right, mapping. So when you choose the keyboard, I don't know if you notice, like for the motion behaviors, it showed the type of motion on the key. If the state changes, it shows the state. We try to make it as WYSIWYG and, you know, as obvious as possible what's going on here. So right arrow key, change to right. Left arrow key, change to left, and only when pressed, there's no need to keep doing it while the key is down. And then let's face back forward, front, the default state, when we release either the left or the right key. So that's basically the key up event for left or right.
So where's the release?
You choose press while down or release.
That
applies to any keys. You get. So here, you know, you've got all the basic keyboard events of down and up and while down and applied to any subset of keys you want. All right. Now, there's if you were paying attention, there was something in the preview that was kind of not what we wanted, but I'll play it just make
he
it
He falls
obvious.
Through the earth.
He falls through the earth. Right. So there's that gravity force. He ended up pushing down what's supposed to be my ground. Why don't we fix that? So something we haven't talked about yet is how this pushing stuff works. So the pushing comes into play when both actors are solid, because we don't allow solid actors to overlap. If you wanted them to overlap, you just make one of them non-solid. But there's something that determines who wins the fight, basically, when two things collide, who pushes whom. And that depends on one of the properties that's built in that all actors have. So if I bring up this list of properties of this Ninja Boy, you can see there are a number of built-in properties for controlling aspects of its motion, horizontal, vertical, and rotation. Here's this can jump that automatically got added when I added those behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's z-index, which has the same meaning it has in Silverlight, just, you know, visually what's on top of what. Opacity, same deal there. And then mass. Mass is just a simple numeric value similar to z-index, and whoever has the higher value wins the pushing fight. So what I'll do is actually, I could give Ninja Boy a negative mass, but instead let's go to this wood block and say, give it a mass of 1 instead of 0. That's really all I need. So now, he falls to the ground. Even though gravity is still pushing him downward, he's not pushing the block. Here's my You know, run, jump, you can see him changing states. So that's, and you know, I can push these guys since they have a lower mass than I do. And there's the beginning of a side-scroller, so let's make it a bit more interactive and give the other things some behaviors.
Awesome.
Rocket Chicken, he's an enemy. Oh, and you know, it's funny, a lot of these things do have multiple states here. Rocket Chicken has a flying state, an overhead view if we have some use for that. I'll just keep it simple. Rocket Chicken will just fly around and let us, and I don't care about that behavior, let's say add a motion, and here's one of these kind of simple AI-ish kind of things. Let's say always follow an actor, and we can say follow a specific actor. Here let's say follow Ninja Boy, and do it at this slow default speed. If we click preview here, oh, I forgot to say toward. That's right. So I said move relative to the actor, but you can move away from the actor, move toward it, move to the left relative to where it is. You can do all kinds of neat things there. But okay.
And will he only be turned on, if you will, when he's in the viewport?
So that's interesting. So right now I have this motion happening on load.
Okay.
So it'll always happen.
Okay.
I could choose a different event.
Is there like an in-viewport event?
There actually is not right now. We have when something enters the scene. We probably soon will have an entering viewport event.
Okay.
But you could write some code to basically say, am I in the viewport right now?
Oh, okay.
If so, do the motion. But if I click preview here, now we can see this guy is following me. And then the later guy's following me, and you know they're kind of swarming me. And so, and there's the huge guy. You know, right now I can just push these guys around, and you know, no one's killing anyone because we haven't configured that yet. But here they're gradually pushing me upward, which is kind of funny. but you know, I can get out of there and whatever. So,
all right.
Great. So let's see what can we do to make this more interesting. Typically, in these kind of games, you might want to jump on someone's head, a bad guy's head, to kill them. So, let's say, actually, on this Rocket Chicken, let's say, disappear on a collision event. So, similar to this kind of thing we've done before. If I collide with Ninja Boy, make myself disappear. But if you notice down here, it's kind of small, but you can decide exactly what directions you care about this collision event being raised. By default, it'll happen no matter what direction the collision happens, but I want this to only be triggered when Ninja Boy jumps on the top of Rocket Chicken, which I can visually see here. Ninja Boy's on top. So I'll deselect these other directions, and that's the collision that I care about. while I'm at it, I'll add another special effect, like this fireworks sort of explosion. Let's see, what else can we do while we're editing this game? The whole flagpole flag thing, this is another thing where I can say... add a motion to the flag that moves upward. Let's just try a distance of 100. Let's see what that looks like in the preview. And that's a bit too much, so let's say maybe 90, make it go a little faster. Oops, still not. Right, let's try 70. All right, so that
Perfect.
Looks good as far as the flag raising. Now all we need to do is trigger that when the flag collides with Ninja Boy. And we can add a neat little sound and all that stuff.
Sure.
Let's see. Oh, I haven't added any background music yet. There's, just like with the sound effects, a nice library of background music. I think... Yes, there happens to be a song called Adventure, which just sounds really appropriate for this type of game. I think that pretty much does it. So let's play this thing. There's our music. I'll try to kill this Rocket Chicken. Bam! There's another one. Bam! Collide with the flag. It raises. Actually, we can see these blocks are being pushed by this huge chicken, which I can't really get to the top of, so... You know, he just kind of has to follow me around like a balloon. But, you know, I can keep
awesome.
Going, and you know, basically your imagination's the limit on all the kinds of interesting little things you can put in there.
Absolutely.
And I don't know if you noticed also this custom viewport behavior of the viewport still, but when I get to the edge, now it scrolls. That's
right.
That whole margin thing that the code was doing. You know, and this is allowing me to go backwards. It's a simple tweak either to the code or... it's a simple tweak to the code, or if you want to do a straightforward motion behavior on the viewport to say, just always scroll to the right at a given speed, never allow the actor to go backwards. You know, all kinds of things like that. I don't know. That's basically what I wanted to show.
Well, that's awesome. How about, super quick, so we saw building games from scratch. Now,
yes.
You guys are actually building... Where you can say, rather than start from scratch, you'll have a couple of pre-built templates. Can you show those? Or
They aren't quite ready.
Or what do you have by the time people watch this video?
Right, okay. So we do plan on having a long list of nice games to choose from. And, you know, we call... There'll be that list on the main screen called templates, but they really will be just another Popfly project. So... The action of kind of ripping it and digging into it will be the same, whether it's a game that happens to be in that list that's in your face, or whether you're just searching around on Popfly, you can easily search for other people's games. But some of the things that we plan on having in there by default are a variety of side-scrollers, whether it's something like this where you're running and jumping, or something where you're flying and avoiding obstacles. Puzzle, drag-and-drop kind of games, maybe like a cake-decorating kind of game. We've got already in there some nice cupcake actors and sprinkles and frosting and fruit and all kinds of things. And some racing games, not just that kind that I created, which really isn't racing, but more traditional. There's a road, there may be five cars. You try to, you know, get to the end the quickest. What else?
How about some other questions? Like, you built this all in Silverlight, and, I mean, you know, I know you're the Mac Daddy of XAML and WPF, but, like, how much... You said you started 6 months, and I remember the first time I saw this, you effectively had the Space Invaders game built.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how much time does it take to go from sort of prototype to building? And so what are some of the challenges in... Things like debugging, where you have multiple events and you need to kind of see what is going on.
Right, right. It's definitely a challenge to do it all in Silverlight 1.0. But as you can see, it is absolutely possible. I mean, we're greatly looking forward to being able to take advantage of Silverlight 2 specific features, because certainly the controls and managed language support and all that can make the development experience for us just a whole lot nicer. I don't know. I mean, from the beginning, when I was working on this, I was kind of viewing it not as a prototype, but, you know, I wanted this thing to become a reality. So, you know, I wanted to work toward the goal of actually, you know, this release that we're doing, in just a week or so. I don't know. I mean, it is a lot of getting familiar with the idiosyncrasies of the browsers and dealing with the ways to debug in there. And, you know, fortunately, even though there is a lot of things we have to do ourselves, staying in the Silverlight 1.0 subset, certainly Silverlight takes away a lot of the pain of typical cross-browser development. We do support Firefox and IE for now.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, most of the issues as far as weird differences in the DOM and all that are just not an issue for us. Of course, we still interleave some HTML and Silverlight content for the purpose of text boxes and scrolling, things that also can go away once we're entirely Silverlight 2 based. But I don't know. I don't know that I have any you know, silver bullets there. But one of the things, actually, speaking of debugging, though, that I didn't get to show you is there are some features here that customers can take advantage of to help debug their games. I don't know if you quickly want to go to the screen. For one thing, there is a console here, and you can encode, write your own messages to the console, or as the game goes along, if I restart it here.
So you can kind of see what events are firing, or...
Right, you can see all kinds of information about... what's going on here as actors respond, as actors go away, in addition to your own messages. There's a little performance monitor, which, you know, A lot of these features I basically added for myself in the development of this, but you know they can be useful for people that are more advanced. Actually, and also the filter here, the console supports regexes for include and exclude filters, like a lot of tools. So so if you don't care about all these events that we spit out and just want to see your own logging, you can restrict it to that. There's a performance pane here, so it tells you some rough stats that are critical for good performance. Number of actors. Maybe you forgot to give an actor a behavior to disappear when it leaves the scene. And if you're spawning a lot of actors and they keep hanging around, never go away, that could become a performance issue at some point. Similarly, like the number of event listeners, the more event listeners you have, the more of a performance impact that can have. We're spitting out the Silverlight's frame rate, and then the current tick interval as kind of a nice way to measure how much is my performance suffering. By default, it should be about 10 milliseconds every tick, but if you're doing a lot of processor-intensive things, you could see that decline, and just kind of more evidence of issues to go after. You can also show the collision edges in your live game, so if I unpause this, you can see the chicken has circular edges.
So how'd you do that?
Oh, sorry, there's this edges button up here.
Okay.
And so actually, yeah, let me start this game again. So here you can see, actually, I don't know if you noticed in the IDE, but in the design experience, that the even the multiple states of this ninja have different edges. So the front view has these circular edges, the mm-hmm. side view have these square edges, and that really is what matters when it comes to the collision events. So
right, it's the hitbox, if you will.
The hitbox, yeah. But there's a visual indication of things that are solid versus non-solid, so it's just some extra bit of debug help there to help figure out if things aren't quite behaving like you would expect.
Wow, this stuff is awesome. I think the other thing from a development perspective is if you have a sector whiteboard, how do you get all these events to sort of hook up and just work together and within actors? Like, do you just like effectively add listeners?
Yeah.
Events, and because I just know JavaScript is kind of a pain. So if you want to try and whiteboard at a high level how a game works,
sure.
Adding keyboard events, adding.
Basically, they're
collision detection.
Yeah, at a high level, there is a game loop, and so every tick, we basically see. Are there events that need to be raised? An event like the timer event that happens on every tick, well, that gets raised every tick. In this every tick, it also gives us the opportunity to say, okay, is a key being pressed? What key? Is the mouse button being clicked? Is something colliding? All that processing we do in the game loop every single tick. And then we just basically maintain a list of listeners that care about the events, and that enables an arbitrary actor or an arbitrary scene to listen, for example, on a collision between any two arbitrary actors.
Or at a specific time, move left, move right.
Right, right. So it's all about, you know, this continual loop, raising the events, trigger the listeners if they're there, and then the listeners, invoke the behavior. Each behavior is just a function, is just an event handler.
Okay.
Which becomes a little more obvious when switching to code. You can kind of see if I have a behavior named B, I actually see, okay, function B, and it has the two parameters, sender and event args. And actually, you know, this is the current actor scene, whatever that function lives on, and the sender depends on what the event is, and the event arg also depends on the events. In the case of collisions, the event args contain the two actors that collided, for example. Or in the case of a key event, it's what keys were pressed. Of course, since you can get so specific with the kind of pre-filtering on these events and make this only get executed on when the D key is pressed, for example, it becomes pretty rare that you actually have to write code that uses these event args.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, pre-filter the keys, pre-filter what actors are colliding. It gets rid of that boilerplate kind of code that you would have to write otherwise. And, you know, we've got a set of APIs on actors, on scenes, on the game that are kind of the global level.
And when you talk about these APIs, you're talking about JavaScript. Are you guys using the Ajax control library? Like, for example, like even simple things like properties
mm-hmm.
are not things that necessarily exist in JavaScript. So,
right.
So are you guys doing them, or what's sort of the mapping that you guys are doing?
We do use the Ajax control toolkit and the Ajax library a bit, and it is there in the environment. So for the code that you write, if you know functions that are there because of the Ajax library. You can,
dollar get for yep, random...
Exactly. You can feel free to use them.
Item.
Of course, the chance... You really have no occasion to use the DOM, and actually we discourage you using the DOM in these games because there are advantages of keeping them 100% silver light, so we can support full screen mode and automatic scaling without you using DOM elements that don't support that. But yes, you can use any functions in there. You asked about properties, yes. So what we're actually doing is analogous to dependency properties in Silverlight and WPF because there's a lot of extra stuff that we want to trigger potentially based on a property being changed, like these property changed events. And so what it ends up looking like in code is for the properties that we list in the UI and support these property changed events for, you say like this dot get value of x, which we saw a little bit of that quickly in the code that I brought up, or you know this dot set value x to 5. That's for our properties with these special extra behaviors. Of course, if you wanted to write code that says you know this dot foo equals 5. And just have it be just some random field that you stick there. Nothing's preventing you from doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that this kind of thing doesn't get the same kind of treatment throughout the rest of the UI and automatic change notifications and all that. So there is a lot of this that we are kind of doing ourselves and providing this experience for you, but it is extremely compatible with the schemes that Silverlight has and things that are introduced in Silverlight 2. And so if some point in the future, if you're doing this in a different language and you're using the Silverlight APIs for doing the same kind of things, it's a very natural fit.
Yeah, so when do you think you guys will move over to Silverlight 2? I mean, I know you guys have talked about it already, but is it very soon now or when we get there?
it probably is pretty soon, but we haven't really decided for sure yet. I mean, the important thing to keep in mind is that it's not like we don't support Silverlight 2. By default, everything will work in both. In someone's game, if they want to do some custom XAML or custom logic that only works in Silverlight 2 while they've just created themselves a game that requires Silverlight 2, the big thing for us is when do we make Silverlight 2 a requirement for every game that's out there, or just you know a requirement for entering this creation process, and it will happen soon, I'm sure.
So just to be clear on that point, what you're saying is if somebody has Silverlight 2 and has you know some physics library or something else mm-hmm. that they want to integrate, they can still use Silverlight 2 in their game. It's just a Silverlight 2 and how much integration of features have you guys looked into things like actors and events? Like, will it be able to see Silverlight 2 events? Or are a lot of the stuff you're kind of doing manually or doing sort of like
right.
a JavaScript wrapper that actually calls that stuff? Or
right. So right now, doing if you do decide to add Silverlight 2 specific stuff into your game, you basically are going to have to do a lot on your own. And, of course, when we kind of officially supported and required ourselves, that won't be true. But for now, you would have to do the work of bridging what's going on in JavaScript to what's going on in your managed code, if that's what you did. At the same time, Silverlight 2 exposes some extra things to the browser's JavaScript engine. So if you have Silverlight 2 installed, for example, you can start using text box in your XAML. And something like that, okay, fine. You can just add it. There's nothing else extra fancy you have to do. If you have Silverlight 2, it'll work. If you have Silverlight 1, it won't work. So that's the other thing where if you're kind of venturing into this territory on your own, handling the failure case is also left up to you. So, you know, it's not something I'd probably encourage too much of at this point unless you really are serious about it and kind of covering all the angles. Our focus right now is for people to create all kinds of very interesting games and get people interested in doing this that may have, you know, never tried creating the game if it weren't for this tool.
Sure, sure. I guess the point is you guys aren't explicitly blocking or
that's
anything.
That's right.
It's just, you know, it's all on your own.
It's all on your own.
Cool.
And in the near future, it won't be all on your own.
So, awesome stuff. Adam, I think people are going to love it. So, very cool. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much.